This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, so we're here. It's Monday morning. It's the 9th of September. Spring is properly sprung. I hope you're ready to
And you're back.
I'm back from my travels, which were superb. I didn't get into too much of that earlier, but I did an amazing trip. I mean, we spoke to Seymour from Cruises International before I left. I mean, I did this for the first time properly last year.
Mm-hmm.
What's so nice about it is you get on this ship and you go to all these amazing places and you have a place that you go to every night that's the same place. You have your clothes packed up.
Yes,
in the cupboard.
You don't have to pack and unpack.
Oh, so nice. You've got, you know,
take
you,
buses.
Yeah, you don't you have to fly from here to
trains.
Here. And you could go to sea. I did Rome before we took off on the cruise. So I did Rome as a little expedition of my own, which I loved. And I promise you I'll be talking about that a lot. So we'll get to all the detail of that trip later on. It was just superb. But then I went to Portofino, which is just the most beautiful little town on the Italian Riviera. You been there?
No, I haven't been to Italy. I've been everywhere but Italy.
Well, neither had I really. I'd been to Venice,
yeah,
which is on the other side, and I'd been there for a weekend because I was there for business. But this is my first Italian experience, and I've always heard people talk about Italy and go, oh, it's amazing, you got to see it, and it's phenomenal. Well, it is.
Didn't live up to the hype.
All of those things. I mean, by the end, I was so exhausted, I didn't even take the day trip into Florence, but I'd seen so much. So we did Portofino, then Monaco, Nice, Saint-Tropez. This sounds like one of those ads, those cigarette ads in the 80s. From Saint-Tropez to Monaco.
Yes.
The life of the rich and famous.
It really felt like that. It felt unbelievable. I went to Ajaccio, which is the capital of Corsica. Corsica is, of course, an island in the Mediterranean, island that most famously gave birth to Napoleon. I saw Napoleon's shitty little house he was born in. We stumbled on it, really. I mean, I was walking around the streets of Corsica, and there's this marble plaque that says in French, this is the birthplace of Napoleon, the Emperor of France. So I thought, well, we've got to go in, and you pay like a lousy €5 or whatever to get in. And they take you around this house, and there's like a couple of old bits of furniture that were left over by, you know, the Bonaparte family when they were chased out of there or they left or whatever. And you know, they've brought in some actual relics of Napoleon, like there's his sword there and there's some stuff that belonged to him. It's really cool. Ajaccio is not a place I would have ever gone to if I weren't on a ship.
I don't think that word's ever passed through my ears.
Exactly. Most people weren't even sure how to pronounce it. And then the most beautiful little place called Porto Venere, which is it's a tiny little town. It was basically never reached by land. It's a little town. It's got an island off of it. The most beautiful buildings all painted in orange and blue and red and green, and this magnificent little beach on the Mediterranean, and it's got this church that's on a cliff's edge with these views that are just like out of a picture book. And it's the entry to Cinque Terre, which is the five coastal villages that you could never reach by land. You had to reach them by sea.
How was the food?
Food was spectacular.
Because you didn't roll in here this morning.
Yeah, I'm not exactly thin. I think I put on like a kilogram or two. That's what I realized. But I've got to eat nothing for the next 3 weeks.
Oh, and come on.
Feel like a fat pig. Yes, absolutely. No, 3 weeks. I'm giving myself, in fact, until the end of October to be ready for summer. So I'm going to
drink until the end of October 2023.
Drink apple juice, and I'm going to eat fresh air, and I'm going to maybe drink a bit of water. That's it. That's all.
Block of ice and a block of cheese.
There
that's
we go.
The diet.
And
follow what the models do and eat
some dust.
Toilet paper.
Yeah, dust.
But was it worth it? Did you binge out? Did you stuff your face?
I'm not a guy. I'm not a big foodie. You know this. But I do love tomatoes, and the Italians have tomatoes that are better than anyone else's.
Humble tomato.
It's the greatest thing. So I had bruschetta in Rome. I had bruschetta in Portofino, I had it in Porto Venere, and I had it in one other place, I think Ajaccio. And it's just great. They just do it. It's so simple. It's really, all bruschetta is tomato cut up and put on toast. Really, that's all it is.
But it's the quality of the bread, the quality of the olive oil, and those Mediterranean tomatoes are like fruits.
They're
well,
amazing.
I mean, they are fruits, but you can eat them like an apple.
I can't.
Beautiful.
Appreciate it the way you clearly do. Mm.
I like Italian food, so I loved it. I did. I had a little pasta the one day. I had a pizza in Rome, which was fantastic. Yeah, they just
let me guess. Plain margarita.
Yeah.
Did you get some chili on the side?
No.
Oh.
Just had it plain. Mm.
Look at you wilding out.
I'm breaking
keeping it plain. What What about my friends, the carabinieri?
I saw them, Sia. I took a picture for you.
Do they have fluffy robes and hats on?
So they're the police, the polizia, and the carabinieri, who are the guys. There was some tourist on a bicycle who was looking for things, and the carabinieri pulled up in their cars are branded.
Yes.
And they wear like these uniforms. Sia, you're going to love this.
Fabulous uniforms, I'm guessing.
You thought they were fabulous when we looked them up the other day on the internet. But they really are like these super policemen.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, I didn't know that they were any good at anything. But look at their outfits here. Just describe it.
Oh, look at that. You know when Michael Jackson tried to do that whole military outfit?
Yeah.
That's what they're essentially wearing.
They actually look like that.
Just there are a lot of accessories.
These tight black pants with the stripes on,
red stripes
on the side.
Like a white sash thing on.
And they've got like a beret.
Ooh, fantastic.
But they used to wear boots. They look like hunter's boots.
Mm. They used to have these plumed helmets and things.
Plumed?
It's ridiculous. With like ostrich feathers in them. It's totally over the top. Bizarre.
So necessary, right? Yeah. That's the image of intimidation when you're
so
about to
break. So they're not the police?
No, they're better than the police. They're like the prefecture.
Mm.
They're a military force.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then one last thing you were worried about, the pickpocketing.
No problems at all. It's all complete hysteria. I've decided, and you know, I had arguments with people about this on the trip, but I've decided these travel websites are full of people who complain and full of people who like to moan about things. I didn't have any incidents at all. I didn't even feel a slight feeling of insecurity or unhappiness or unease in Rome at all.
Not whether like Cape Town where your phone gets taken out of your hand.
Right. No, day and night I was happy as can be in Rome. I was not concerned for my safety at any point. I walked around on my own early on the morning of Saturday last week. I went to the middle of the Circus Maximus and I was walking around there. I didn't feel worried at all. It's full of activity and there's just so much going on. It was fantastic. And for someone who's a history fan like I am, it was like a feast. I could not have eaten any more. By the end of the trip, I was satisfied. I actually said, my cup runneth over.
You were satiated.
Yeah. And nothing more that I wanted.
And look, you're going back as well to the comfort and the convenience of the cruise.
You so good.
Get to go back to your same room. What's the entertainment like that you liked on the cruise?
Well, there's so much to do. I mean, you eat on the ship. Forget about eating in the restaurants and things on land, but you eat on the ship. And you get these excursions that you can go on, like you go and spend the day in, you know, Tuscany. Or you can go to the beach in Saint-Tropez and all this kind of thing that you would never be able to do on a holiday all in one because you're moving the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But on the ship, look, I've said before, if you've never done it before, you really need to because it isn't, first of all, as expensive as you think. It depends on what kind of cruise you go on. It also is, it can be family friendly. It can be for young people. It can be for old people. It can be for all the generations. There was a Portuguese family on board who there were like three or four generations of them that were celebrating the grandfather's birthday or whatever.
Wow.
So he'd obviously had a lot of money and he'd paid for everybody. There was this huge big family on board. But really, I saw couples. There were parties every night. I maybe made two of them. There's fun stuff. Like people drink a ton on these ships. They drink and the cocktails are amazing. And if you buy one of those packages where it's all inclusive, you can have whatever you want. Mm. So I've got to recommend that you talk to the guys at Cruises International. Just ask them for a quote and try it out. It might be something you really want to do. And I don't think you'll be disappointed. The one night there was a guy from New York He's actually, I think he's English originally, but he was in New York doing the Broadway shows for Billy Joel's Piano Man.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. I went to see his show. It was really the only thing I remember from an entertainment point of view on the ship that just blew me away. This guy was superb. He sang, he played the piano, played the harmonica. He was just so talented. They had a band on board that were tight, man. These guys could do everything. Saxophone player, trombone player, trumpeter. They had a guy on the drums, keyboards, guitarist who was just brilliant. They were brilliant. Jeez. Loved this band. So there was something to do all the time.
The ship itself was a holiday.
Right.
On its own.
And you know what? If you ran out of things to do, you could sit on your balcony and watch the whole world go by. Are you kidding me? The sea, the weather was amazing. It was just superb. So there we are. I hope it made you jealous.
You have. But are you feeling well rested?
Fantastic. I'm ready. Ready for any.
Good to go.
Yeah. Good to go. All right. Let's get into some stuff, shall we? If you want to know more, you can call and ask me, or you can send me a voice note, 0797482090. So there are a couple of things that we need to cover this morning. First of all, there's been a mystery vaping illness.
Yes.
I still am a little bit nervous about these vape pens that people use, these vape fanatics, because I've tried them.
Yeah.
I'm not a smoker, as you know, but I've tried them, and I don't like the way they get all hot. First of all, that makes me a bit nervous. Second of all, as much as they smell better than a cigarette, I'm wondering what they do to your lungs.
Exactly. Well, I've had pneumonia from vaping before. It's when e-cigarettes really first started in the country. I tried to make the switch and got really ill. But this vaping illness has been spreading rapidly across the United States. I'm sure it's worldwide, but this is where the studies are based, is in the U.S. Some scientists have reported the illness to possibly be a new vaping-induced form of lipoid pneumonia. However,
hang on. Is it just passed because you've got a mouth touching this thing and then another mouth touching it?
Yes.
So it's not because the vaping is causing the pneumonia. It's not the vaping.
It's the vaping that's causing it.
It is?
Yes.
It's the chemicals in there?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
And now experts are suspecting...
I thought it was just people with germs on their lips.
Are now suspecting a chemical called vitamin E acetate, which is potentially the primary culprit. There are now over 450 cases of the lung illness suspected to be associated with e-cigarette use. Three deaths have been reported in the U.S. alone, a fourth currently under investigation. So, yeah, it seems to be all things now seem to be pointing to this vitamin E acetate. Who thought vitamin E was bad? But anything in excess is bad, I suppose.
Okay, there's another reason to be afraid of these things. I'm not sure that we should be...
putting anything into our lungs, says me.
Yeah, you smoke, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Listen, none of us are perfect, but we should at least know what the dangers are.
Exactly.
Okay.
Stand up to it.
All right. Well, just be aware of this stuff, because you might be thinking that vaping is a healthier way of smoking.
It's not necessarily.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I mean, just from my own experience, I had a really bad reaction to it.
Really? What happened with you?
I got pneumonia.
So this is exactly what you were talking
about. Yeah, exactly that.
From the vaping.
Mm.
Sure. All right. I want to talk about something that's much, much older than the stuff that I saw in Rome, but it's got to do with here, obviously, because this is the place that a lot of these fossils are now coming to light.
Mm-hmm.
The skull of humanity's oldest known ancestor is changing our understanding of evolution.
Yes.
A story in the news.
So it's not technically a skull. It's a cranium, which is the skull without the lower jaw. Yes. And it was recently discovered, 3.8 million years old, and is the hottest topic of conversation among paleoanthropologists right now.
I love that word.
Oh, that just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It's called the Australopithecus anamensis.
Okay.
We know about Sediba, which was found here. This is anamensis, and it's called that because of the region that it was found in Ethiopia.
Right.
Mm. So, you know, I mean, fossils are found all the time, so what's the big deal with this one? Well, it turns out that it moves timelines completely.
Uh-oh.
Mm.
This freaks people out, by the way, because it means that there might have been different kinds of humans living around each other at the same time, and that some humans hunted others, and some... This is the whole problem with the Neanderthal thing, is that people are very uncomfortable with the fact that we might have eaten the Neanderthals, we might have mated with them, we might have interbred with them.
We may have also interbred with
this one.
Gorillas.
Oh, really?
Yes. There's a bit of gorilla in us, too.
Yeah, so if you think you're better than the other apes, I've got bad news for you. Yeah. You've got a, there's a whole lot happening in terms of our discovery of new fossils. It's going to make you very uncomfortable.
So this new discovery really pushes everything out. It basically implies, if you look at the timelines, mm-hmm. That both species, the A. afarensis and this one, mm-hmm. were overlapping for at least 100,000 years. That makes it impossible for A. afarensis to have evolved gradually from one single ancestral group. In fact, it's becoming increasingly obvious that most species on our evolutionary lineage are likely evolved by branching off from existing groups. And that's exactly it. Hmm. We're not just from one
ancestor.
It's not a vertically straight line.
And that means, again, you know, that this is why you can't say you're black or you're white. For example, I mean, a lot of people go, well, black people X, Y, and Z. And I'm always like, well, which black people? Because there's more genetic diversity in Africa than there is in all of the rest of the world. In other words, black people are more different from each other than the rest of us are different from black people.
Yes.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Do you get that?
Mm-hmm.
Like someone from Senegal or Morocco or the
Egypt.
Khoisan, they're so genetically varied, and there are so many differences going on there that they make the difference between someone from Japan and someone from Norway almost negligible.
Yeah,
that's an interesting thing, and it just flies in the face of all this ridiculous stuff about how we're special humans, that we're somehow better than everything else that was invented or created or that evolved, that somehow we're at the pinnacle of evolution. Other animals are in some ways way better than us at many things.
Mm.
Ospreys have much better eyesight than we do. Mm. There are many animals that are stronger physically than us. There are many animals that live longer than us. There are some animals that have the ability to do complex things that we haven't even figured out yet. I mean, like, for example, being able to fly south in the winter if you're a northern species of swallow. We don't have the ability to know where south or north is. We have to look at a compass.
I just look at something as simple as the birds and their nests in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
The weaver birds versus the sparrows.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they raise their young. And
whose side are you on, by the way? I'm a big weaver fan.
Yeah, I'm definitely. I mean, the sparrow's nest looks a bit shitty. But just yesterday I rescued a little fledgling.
Team sparrow.
A little fledgling sparrow fell out of the nest.
Yeah.
And I don't know why these birds continue to build their nests in my garden. I have four cats and a dog.
Yeah, it's not the best place.
And they bring their little fledglings onto the grass and teach them how to fly, and my cats just eat them.
Oh, horrible. It's hard.
Really
Leanne's horrible. Leanne's jungle in her back garden.
So yesterday I picked up a little fledgling with my hands, and eventually I put all the cats into the house.
Yeah.
But it just wouldn't fly, and the nest was too high for me to reach.
Oh, no.
So eventually I had to just turn my back and
let nature take its course.
Yeah.
Hey, Leanne. So sad.
But I don't think they got it, because I kept checking and kept looking out the window. But,
So.
Well, human evolution is very complicated, and it's becoming more complicated, and we will discover even more things that will upset the status quo.
Sure.
Just when we think we've figured it out, there's something new. Some new piece of information, some new skeleton, some new piece of a cranium that they discover somewhere in Ethiopia, and it throws everybody's timeline out. So you've got to be open to this. That's why having fixed ideas about what it means to be human and having fixed ideas about tribalism and race, and it's just dangerous, man. If you think that way, you are on a hiding to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. just because we didn't get to this on Friday and we touched on it a little in the first hour, but here's more of a concise update in the Emilie Diacher kidnapping and what has transpired since.
This is the girl who was kidnapped. She was snatched out of her mother's arms. It all sounded a little bit suspicious at the time because she was suddenly returned to them. There were demands for money, but they didn't end up being lived up to, and the child was eventually returned safely.
Yeah, I think from the onset, it was a little suspicious that it seemed far from an isolated incident. If it was out of all the kids who were there, she was snatched straight out of her mother's arms, and how was that possible? And there was no one who intervened. It just seemed a little too sketchy. So now it seems that Emilie was actually used as a bargaining tool because there's some people around her who owed some money in drug trafficking and robbery. Just another day, right?
Tell me more.
So because the teacher, Emilie's teacher, and one other suspect in the case had alleged drug debts of hundreds of thousands of rands, Emilie was used as a bargaining tool in this entire incident. So police so far have arrested three suspects in connection with the abduction, among them a teacher who's employed at Emilie's primary school. And the suspects are expected to appear in the Vanderbijl Park Magistrates Court today, a week after four men grabbed the grade R pupil from her mother, Angeline Diacher, outside the school. She was released unharmed in the early hours of Tuesday. So the 27-year-old teacher, right now her name can't be revealed because she hasn't appeared in court yet, has been seen linked with Emilie's mother, Angeline, through several photos on Facebook. There was one particular photo that was captioned, "Much love for you." This is what Angeline wrote on the teacher's profile. So sketchy is the name of the game right now.
Who wanted the money? Because obviously if there are drug debts, does the teacher need the money? Does the mom need the money?
It's not clear to me.
Were they in cahoots to get the money from someone else?
But it just seems that there was a...
This poor child, I mean, imagine what happened.
Well, yeah. It's alleged as well that the mastermind behind the kidnapping was a Nigerian who also managed the ransom negotiation with Emilie's parents. So, yeah, I don't know who exactly was involved with all of this drug trafficking or who was using these drugs. But here's this syndicate forming, consisting of, you know, South Africans and allegedly some people from Nigeria as well. They were not operating in Vanderbijl Park, but they were all operating in Johannesburg and also the East Rand of Johannesburg. So,
good heavens. Some crazy stuff going on, man.
Imagine
my teachers were so boring. None of them were had drug debts. But I think back to my primary school. None of my teachers were. I don't even suspect any of them were on prescribed medication, let alone hard drugs and had debts with
Nigerians. Some of my teachers needed to be on medication.
Nah, I just had a teacher who would sneak in some strawberry lips for us after school.
Oh. What?
Yeah.
Wow. Is that the one who became a porn star?
No, not the porn.
Sia had a way more interesting school.
It was him too.
Yeah, Sia's school was way more interesting than yours and mine.
Mine was just quite incestuous. All the teachers were
having sex with each other.
Yeah.
We had one teacher who was having sex with another teacher. We did have a pupil who was having sex with a teacher.
Yes, we had that too, and it was lesbians.
Lesbians?
On top of it.
Oh. Wow.
And the teacher's name was Mrs. Mann. Miss Mann.
Well, now you've just revealed everything.
Oh, dear, I did too. You know, I forget that other people are listening.
Well,
you honestly just realized that now.
I'm going to point out one other thing. Like, whenever I hear about these kidnappings, I immediately get suspicious. And I know that there are parents who are really worried about their kids. You leave your child at school and you hope that someone, a responsible adult there, is going to do their best to look after them.
Mm-hmm.
And you drive around with them in your car and you think, well, I'll leave them in here and just pop into the shop quickly and, you know, make sure the window's open and all the rest of it. But they'll be fine. I'll lock the car and I'll be back in 2 seconds. I just need to buy milk or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you think they're at home and you're at work and they'll be safe.
Mm.
You don't expect anything to happen to them. The reality is very few kids are kidnapped. It's tiny. The amount of actual kidnapping that happens in the world is tiny. even in places where you think it's quite high, like in South America, there are a lot of kids kidnapped for ransom.
Austria, Germany.
Yeah, it's a very rare thing, which is why it upsets us so much, because it really shouldn't happen at all. But I've got to remind any parent who's paranoid about this stuff that it's extremely unlikely that your child is the target of some kidnapper. People don't really want your kid, is what I'm getting at. Like, I know you are the parents, so you think it's the most valuable thing you've ever had in your life, and I understand that. But honestly, if you're very rational about this, there's nobody who really wants your kid. Your kid's a pain in the backside. It's a lot of work. It's expensive.
Got a snotty nose.
Snotty nose. Difficult child. You know what it's like being a parent. I don't have to tell you this. No one is after your kid. Just calm down. The chances that someone would be very slim. And as long as you're observant, you're paying attention, and you're not putting your child in the way of danger or hanging around with people who are dangerous, or not making sure that you're just, you know, doing the basics.
And teaching your child as well.
Due diligence, yeah, around the school and, you know, the teachers and that kind of thing. You should be all right. It is so – the reason it always makes the headlines is because it's so rare.
Here's what I'm sort of piecing together, and I'm allowing my imagination to run away with me for a moment. I think Angeline, the mother, was definitely involved in this.
Well, do we know?
I'm letting my imagination go with that. Okay. She was involved in this.
All right.
And
she is making a lot of assumptions.
Don't think her husband or the rest of the family knows about her drug past or her drug activities, because one of the first people who spoke out on behalf of the family was a grandfather who says, you know, we're just so grateful to have our granddaughter back safe and unharmed. Yeah. Now imagine being married to someone who you now find out you did not know. Because now the whole family is going to look at Angeline in a whole new different light, like, whoa.
Okay. I think somebody who's snorted 100,000 rands worth of drugs, you're gonna pick that up in their personality.
Hey, some people
let's just get back to the point I was trying to make, because this links also to the violence against women and all the marches we were having last week. And so the uncomfortable reality of both of these stories, kidnapping and violence against women, is that it is most likely to be perpetrated within the family. Yep.
Mm.
All right? So if you want to know who the most dangerous people in your life are, it's not some guy walking on the street. It's not the people you do your shopping with every morning. Of course, there are exceptions, but most of the danger is really close to home. The chances, if you're a woman, chances of you being abused by anyone outside of your immediate spouse, family, that kind of thing, very slim.
Yeah.
Very, very slim. And the same goes for kidnapping. You know, police will back you up on this. You just have to look up all the statistics. Facts don't lie. Facts are not interested in how you feel about yourself when you walk around. Not every man out there is trying to rape and murder and kill you. Not every person is trying to steal your child. The most dangerous people in your life are the ones closest to you.
Yeah.
The ones that you think you know. And I don't want to make you extra paranoid. But if there's danger, it's going to come from there. It's not going to come from some passerby.
Well, in one of the incidents, it was a postal worker. So that's not really someone known. No. But the other incident recently was the murder of South African boxing champ Leandre Yeerkels.
What happened there?
Her boyfriend, who is
she's the boxing champ?
Yes.
Wow.
Undefeated. Okay. Her boyfriend was with the police. He's a police officer.
Yeah.
And he shot her, apparently after an argument. He also shot her mother, who passed away. And then he, in a police car chase himself, was killed.
Sure.
So that just, you know, shows you that it can very often be someone who you're known to.
What a horrible story. My God, there's some funny stuff going on. I mean, listen, I'm throwing myself back into the news this morning. I know a lot of you guys have been dealing with this while I've been away, and I haven't been paying attention to the news at all. There's a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, very strange.
Pay attention to the world.
There was also an incident of a man who hung his four children.
Oh.
And then admitted to it. He's in court.
Listen, have you got any good news for me this morning?
Yes, I do.
We'll get to that in a second. Let's let's wrap up the bad news, because we have to talk about Robert Mugabe. And a lot of people are, and we had KF Malindi, he has to host a show here on cliffcentral.com. It was called, what was your show called? Beyond Borders, right? Hey, No Borders. KF, are you there? KF? Can you hear me? I don't know if he's connected, Sia. KF? Hello? Mr. KF Malindi? Can you hear us? He's actually on the line from Mozambique. Well known for its great internet connectivity. KF, can you hear me?
Hi, Garrett. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, man. Sorry, I don't know what was going on there. So you were the host of a show we used to have here called No Borders. You're originally from Zimbabwe. You used to speak to a lot of Zimbabwean expats and to Zimbabweans inside the country. So you were our go-to guy when it came to trying to figure out what was happening there. We've spoken to you a few times in the last year or two. The passing of Robert Gabriel Mugabe, does it affect most Zimbabweans on the ground?
I'm going to be very honest and blunt, Gareth. Zimbabweans, the majority of Zimbabweans, I think safely say 85% of Zimbabweans are only going to attend that funeral to make sure that he's dead and not to mourn him.
Well, I'm hearing a lot of different reports, and I don't know where they're coming from, and maybe you can help me understand this a little better. There are lots of people who seem to be very seriously upset and sad and personally wounded at the death of Mugabe, and they consider him a hero. Who are these people?
I think, Gareth, you see, because you guys aren't in Zimbabwe, most of the news that you're getting things from ENCA, you're getting things from a lot of international media houses. And because of that, you're going to hear the voices of people like Uhuru Kenyatta, who declared, I think, 3 days of mourning in Kenya for Robert Mugabe. You're going to hear news from people like Julius Malema. And it's very tricky for other statesmen to speak down on Robert Mugabe. Outside of Zimbabwe, he still is considered by many a pan-Africanist, a patriot, someone who really wanted the economic freedom of Africa. So yes, you will hear that, but in terms of the people in Zimbabwe, the suffering that he caused, no doubt about it, Zimbabweans are indifferent. It's business as usual in Harare. I've been speaking to a lot of friends. I was there 2.5 weeks ago. I've been speaking to friends, and then you've got Zimbabweans all over the world, and no one really cares, in all honesty. People are suffering, and most of what is going on in Zimbabwe right now is because of, it's an aftershock of what Robert Mugabe implemented in terms of policy and his lack of action towards corruption and everything else that led to the economic degradation of the country.
Now, we know he died in Singapore, right? And he's being brought back to Zimbabwe, and they're probably going to give him some kind of elaborate funeral, because Emmerson Mnangagwa has declared him a hero, and they've declared like a week of mourning in Zimbabwe. What do you make of all of that? Is that just political posturing?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way he can run away from it. He is a liberator. Robert Mugabe was a liberator. There's no doubt about it. He's still held in high regards by a number of African statesmen. So for Emmerson Mnangagwa to fail to play that card and to try and take away personally from that legacy would be political suicide. And he worked under Robert Mugabe for the longest. He was mentored by Robert Mugabe, so he still can't deny that. And he has to just try and, play the balance in terms of making sure that he's buried well, he gets all the national rights and so forth and so on. But the sentiment from the people is the complete opposite. People don't care. People think about bread and butter issues. People think of all the damage that he did. His wife owns a house, a 50 million rand house in Sandhurst that she obviously can't access now. His sons are still gallivanting around the world with girls and showing off money on Instagram. The country really does not care. He did, in people's eyes right now, he did more harm than good. You did mention the state ceremony and so forth. Yes, that's going to happen. That's, we expected that. We didn't see it going any other way.
KF, what do you say to South Africans? Because we've got a lot of trouble in our country at the moment, and especially when it comes to illegal foreigners, but that's the term that's used. It's also legal foreigners and people who have legitimate businesses here, a lot of people who could be considered refugees, who are already at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, who are being victimized horribly by South Africans. And they're being blamed for all kinds of things that they're not responsible for, and some of the things that they are, obviously. But this xenophobia that has flared up recently, I want to know what your comments are on this. And it's a very touchy subject because
it is.
I feel like South Africans are not owning up to our responsibilities here. I think the rest of the world is looking at us, and they see us as being very savage and very backward in terms of the way we deal with illegal and legal foreigners. There's a tremendous amount of hatred, of xenophobia, of racism, of ugliness going on. What's your take on all of that?
You know, Gareth, the topic has been covered extensively, you know, on a very social level. You have everyone talking about, oh, when you guys were going through apartheid, we housed you, and, you know, we had your politicians and your freedom fighters, you know, being based in Zimbabwe and Mozambique and so forth and so on. So I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to get into what South Africans need to do. I think that's a South African conversation. I don't want to place myself as that person, and knowing that, you know, I have lived in South Africa for a couple of years, I don't want to place myself in a situation where I have to tell South Africans what to do. I think that's up to South Africans themselves and their own leaders. What I will say is that what this brings out is the failure of other states and their governments to take care of their own people. The reason why you have so many illegal immigrants, so many people moving from their countries coming into South Africa, is because of failed policies and failed economics in other states, Zimbabwe being for one. I mean, one of the best examples. I think stats show about maybe probably 4.3 million Zimbabweans who are in South Africa. That is close to a fifth of our population. A fifth of our population is in South Africa. So what I would rather focus on in terms of xenophobia is that it should be a wake-up call for other statesmen to say, why are our people leaving? Why are we losing our people? Why do we have so much brain drain? Why do we have people moving out of our countries and going to South Africa and being willing to suffer at the hands of criminals? Just generally the lifestyles that they live, the places that they live in, they've had to leave home for a reason. The question is, what is that reason? The question is, what should those statesmen be doing, as opposed to blaming Cyril Ramaphosa? Blame yourself. Take care of your people.
Hello? It seems like we've lost KF. Good point, though. Yep. I mean, that's an interesting take on it.
Take care of your people is the last thing you said, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, and the blame for all of this situation that we're currently experiencing in the Joburg CBD and everything else is as a result of bad leadership throughout the rest of the continent. He's right to point that out. Of course, it doesn't make it right for people in this country to treat anyone else like they've been treated in the last week. And I mean, I'm only picking up little bits and pieces from the headlines, and it's very disturbing what I'm seeing there. All right. There's a lot of other stuff going on. We've got plenty to talk about. Thank you to KF Malindi, and we'll catch up with him again soon. He'll be back in Zim in the coming week, so maybe we'll get some updates from him in the future.
Here's some things just quickly before we move on the Mugabe story.
Yeah.
I was surprised to learn about Singapore and why Mugabe ended up there.
Tell me.
So there are some obvious stories, like the fact that one of their children, Grace and former President Robert Mugabe's children, Bona, actually studies in Singapore. She actually graduated with a master's degree in management, specializing in banking and finance. So that might be a big whoop-de-doo as to why he ended up there. But I was also doing some research and found out that Singapore actually has very strict privacy rules.
Oh, yeah.
So that helps someone in the likes of Mugabe's situation.
He also knows he couldn't have got any kind of meaningful medical care in Zimbabwe, which is the most scary thing. And we're busy in this country talking about an NHI.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, we have terrific medical care in South Africa because of private health care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if we lose that, and if it becomes state-controlled, it's going to be a disaster. And all of our politicians, guess what? They'll all go to Singapore too,
exactly,
to have their operations done. And the rest of us will just die in our state hospitals.
Hex, I know it's all about being more informed, but I watched a Carte Blanche segment on the NHI.
Oh yeah?
I needed a little breather after watching that. But
scary stuff, man.
Singapore has a very strict law and culture against paparazzi
and aggressive media about people in, you know, taking photographs of him and being on his property.
The last public photo that was taken of him was back in 2017 when he was also at the hospital. And these were random journalists. It was the first time he was seen in public since he was forced to resign back then. But also, Singapore has strict rules against political gatherings or protests of major kinds. Right. So he could live there in ease and peace and no one would be able to say a thing. Up until his death, actually, no one had fully confirmed or was allowed to confirm that the former president was at this hospital. So this was paradise for him, to be living in a place where he can't be chased, no one can confirm anything.
People probably wouldn't recognize him.
Well, yeah, true. That's another thing. Someone who has gone about confirming some things is his nephew, Adam Molai, who spoke briefly on behalf of the family about Mugabe's final days and final moments. He said that he was surrounded by family when he passed away and that he died very peacefully. And over the past couple of days, Mugabe would speak about his love for his family.
By the way, I want to ask you something. Do you think that Robert Mugabe's children, you know, this daughter of his that you spoke about now, who's got this qualification in banking, and we shouldn't blame her for her father's ruthless, tyrannical behavior. We shouldn't take that. If she came and asked me for a job, would I prejudice her because her father was Robert Mugabe? Is that fair?
I mean, you have...
What if she's a really capable, really competent, really interesting human being who could add value? Would I not be allowed to hire her because she's Robert Mugabe's daughter?
Off the cuff, I would hesitate a bit, but I'd more hire her than the sons or Grace.
Look,
I mean, she's trying to make something out of herself. The sons are busy.
I'm saying on an individual basis, if you're a shit like his son seemed to be, fine. You don't. If the daughter, though, this one who's qualified, she might be I've never heard of her before. Mm-hmm. If she came here and she said to me, hey, listen, I really want to get into podcasting or whatever, and she was terrific, I think I'd hire her.
You would?
I wouldn't. Well, I certainly wouldn't let the Mugabe name put me off.
Well, they're the offspring of murderers.
Yes, but she's not
serial killers who are absolutely normal.
Yeah, she's not the murderer. She's not the tyrant. She might be a very, very good person. She might be a terrific addition to our team. I'm asking if you think that the children should bear the sins of the father, and I think that's always a terrible thing to do.
You've got to consider that they've been brought up in this mindset, and surely for most of their youth, they would have had his views imprinted on them.
Of course. I mean, let's also say that people are capable of change.
And making their own choices.
Absolutely. Mm. If she was studying in Singapore and, you know, she's qualified, and I don't think anyone should punish her for her father being a shithead.
She's 29 years old, has a child, and is married.
Sure.
If it was me, the Obona, I would change my surname.
Well, she maybe has.
Maybe well, she's known
her husband's.
Yeah, she's known as Bona Mugabe, but she's married to Simba Chikore. I would be Bona Chikore. You don't really want to be associated with that.
Maybe it's interesting if it comes up at a dinner party, but otherwise she might want to keep that to herself. I don't know. I mean, like, a lot of people are embarrassed about their parents. A lot of people are not. You're different. You can't be blamed. If your dad was, as Leanne says, the serial killer, does that mean that you should be written off as a human being too?
But in those cases, you aren't carrying it so obviously. You know, I'm not walking around with my dad murdered 5 people on my forehead, but you're literally carrying around your father's name in this instance.
And the failure of a complete nation.
Sure.
But I've got to say, like, there's part of me that really rebels against the idea of judging the children by the father. I just don't know that that's right. I think it's very, very unfair.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, speaking of the elderly and what to do with them when they start getting near to the day of death.
Who are we talking about here?
people in general.
Oh, okay. There's no one you're particularly earmarking here.
No.
Okay.
In the US, you know, there are a lot of grandmothers and grandfathers who go to live with their families in their twilight years.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And oftentimes, having your parents put into a home can be costly. The standard of care is horrible.
Yeah.
You feel anxious that you're not with them and that you can't see what's going on all the time. So a company has come up with granny pods, which you can put in your garden.
Is this a good thing?
Well, there are mixed reviews, right?
Okay.
But these things are actually quite amazing, and they look like pretty little cottages.
A granny pod?
Yes. They're actually like mini nursing homes in the, you know, in their setup.
You know what? I'm going to be open-minded. Just explain. So it's like a
garden cottage. It's a prefabricated little mobile home, okay?
All right.
But it's hooked up to the main home's existing sewer, water, and power lines. It comes with standard safety features, including hand railings, defibrillators, first aid supplies, lighted floorboards, and a soft floor to minimize damage from falls.
Huh.
So it can be compared to like a bungalow from the outside, and it's on the inside described as a nice hotel suite with a room for a bed, living room space, kitchenette, and bathroom.
Okay.
So the mixed reviews, some are saying that the dwellings could cause problems with neighbors, or they could be seen as putting an aging parent in storage.
That's a granny pod. It does sound like storage.
Where's Gran? She's in the Zozo.
In the Zozo hut in the back. What else are you going to do with your parents?
Well, I mean, this is really great. And perhaps if you had hired a day nurse, she could, or a night nurse, she could spend time with the Gran in there. I think it's a nice idea. And also, you ask Grans and Grandpas. They generally don't want to be in the house with you.
No, they don't want to be in the way, and they also don't want you to be in their way.
Yes, they like their privacy.
And they have different needs. They might be, you know, addled, they might be old, they might be disabled, they might need constant care, and then they can have that in this thing, this granny pod. It's kind of like a Wendy house.
Yes, but it's bigger. It's got lovely French doors.
Look, I think that's a great idea. Granny pod.
The initial name for this makes me remember that ad, I think like mid-2000s, of the Italian grandmother who came out of the cupboard just to cook. And then once she was done cooking, they pushed her back in there. Like, that's what it makes me think
of. And there were actually complaints about that ad. Can you believe it?
If it's
who was
harmless.
The guy in it? Because it was his actual gran.
Really? How do you know this?
I don't know.
Please don't tell me you dated him or something.
No.
I won't put that past you. That's why I have to ask.
No, there was some connection. Wasn't it Sacha Martin then goes gran?
Who did what?
In the advert?
Yes, she was the Italian woman who made the pasta.
Okay, it was her.
They locked her in the cupboard.
And then there were complaints about that ad because it was
elder abuse.
Seen as abuse, yeah.
Well, first of all, if you are still young enough to work, make sure that you're never put in that position. Make sure that you have saved some money and make sure that you are self-sustaining. You shouldn't rely on your kids. It's morally indefensible.
Well,
that you should force yourself onto your children in your old age and be a problem to them. I think that's extremely selfish.
Yeah, my mother won't hear any of it, though.
She's expecting to be a
problem. Oh, absolutely.
Already?
She tells us very bluntly. That's why she had four kids. Because she can bounce around from each of our houses and spend just enough time so that she isn't too annoying to all of us. So, a couple of days here, then once she's overstaying her way, then she'll bounce to the next house, and then the next, and the next.
Yeah.
Ali says, in Tanzania, we don't have a word to describe retirement home or village. We just don't. You keep your elders at home. I don't want old people living with me, thank you. I'm not going to let it happen. My parents better look after themselves. They better have saved. They better have made sure that they are able to sustain their lives, to have someone there to give them medical care. I'm not looking after an
Figure
old
yourself
person.
Out.
I'm not.
It's and one thing.
And I would never do that to another person.
My mum always said she didn't want her children changing her nappies.
Oh.
And you know, her old age has come sooner because of her stroke, and she has a full-time nurse. Mm-hmm. And that's what she wanted. And there's no ways we would put her in a home or something like that. We would have private care at home.
Right.
See, for myself, you're lucky you can afford about
then that's part of what she planned.
Yes. Yeah.
For myself, I'd prefer being in a home.
Would you, Sia?
It's horrible here.
Depends what home.
But at least you get a bit of a social life. You get people around you. Because I don't...
Everyone around you is completely batty. It's horrible.
Not all of them. I mean,
I spent a lot of time in the home where my grandparents were. And they... You don't want to be there. The woman next to you is talking about the World War and she's dribbling cauliflower all over. No.
Yeah, but some of these places look quite fun. They have like these retirement farms where people live in a little village and they all have their own separate little unit. And I mean, it doesn't have to be a depressing, shitty place.
I suppose,
plus,
yeah.
Some of these old people, they have sex with each other. They play card games. They have a good time.
You know what? You're actually right, because when they were in the main village, that was nice when they were in sort of freestanding units. But I think I'm focusing too much on the high care unit that they were in towards the end. That was awful.
I think it's awful to get old, and I think inevitably when you get towards the very end, it doesn't matter whether you're Robert Mugabe in a Singapore hospital with all that money, or if you are someone extremely poor in the Zozo hut in the back garden.
Mm.
I think ultimately death is very sad, and the end of anyone's life is a particularly shit one. But I gotta say, like, it's just wrong to force yourself on everyone else as a problem. And I understand this idea of, like, look after your elders. But don't those elders feel bad about making themselves a burden?
Mm-hmm.
Look, I don't have kids. I don't know what I'm going to do when I'm older. I might have to start adopting some to look after me.
No, but that's even
I don't
horrible.
Want that.
I promise I'm kidding.
Please don't.
See, I don't want that.
Some child is basically a child laborer looking after you in your old age. Ugh.
I'd far rather just pass away in a ward in one of these old age homes. I'd be happy with that.
All right, let's get off to something else, but a little more upbeat, because I can't talk about old people and death at the end of the show. First show I've been back, please.
Well, this just gives you a taste of what we were going through last week.
Leanne always has really interesting stuff for us, like actual tips that we can use every day, and she's got 6 effective ways that you can remove dental plaque naturally. Who doesn't hate dental plaque? Who doesn't love that feeling after you've been to the dentist and they've done that whole oral hygiene thing,
yes,
and they've cleaned away everything and your mouth just feels all fresh?
That's why I never get people who say they're scared of the dentist. It's like, results.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially in today's times, you may not have the money to go to a dentist every 6 months.
Sure.
So one of the natural ways that we've known about, but I've actually never done it, have you, is using baking soda.
Baking soda.
Baking soda.
Yeah. Tell me what you do, because that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Dip your toothbrush into some baking soda with a pinch of salt, your wet toothbrush, and you brush your teeth as usual.
Okay.
And that's quite effective at getting rid of plaque. This one I probably wouldn't try because I don't know where to get aloe vera from. But you can make a powerful toothpaste out of aloe vera and glycerine.
Oh.
And again, baking soda going in there. 1/2 cup of baking soda. How much toothpaste is this?
So that's sodium bicarbonate, right? Baking soda.
Yes. Is it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sodium bicarbonate and some aloe vera and?
Water.
And glycerin.
And glycerin and lemon essential oil. I don't have those things. I'd much rather go to the dentist and just get it
over. I've got all of those in my laboratory, so I'm going to go and try some this afternoon. If I come back with no teeth,
I'm not bad-mouthing her quickly, but I have a friend who's totally, like, trying to live off the earth, be as natural as possible, very aware of what she ingests, and part of her whole...
Hashtag no waste.
Yeah. Part of this whole journey of hers is creating her own toothpaste. Now, you listen to me when I say You can complain about processed food and whatnot, but there's nothing wrong with a bit of meat, some mint, some fluoride, fluorine, whatever the case is, to get your teeth clean. Because she was experimenting and using the likes of activated charcoal for her teeth.
That is a thing.
I don't care. No, I need you to have like some clean, non-stanky breath when I talk to you. Don't give me all of this BS.
Well, maybe that stuff does that too. What do you know? You don't. No,
she needed three iterations until she found something that she says, "Oh yeah, this is as close to natural toothpaste as possible." I'm like, who had to speak to you while you were doing this whole experiment?
This whole natural, all natural products thing. There are things in nature that can kill you.
Yeah.
Just because it says natural doesn't mean it's good. Safer or better.
Absolutely.
Okay, but if you do want to use natural things, another thing you can use is orange peel. So you eat the orange and then you use the peel, the inside of the peel.
All right.
To rub onto your teeth.
Y'all.
Sesame seeds. Apparently chewing on some of those can actually remove plaque. And afterwards you use a dry brush to remove any remaining seeds. You can also like grind them down and use them as a scrub.
I'm so interested right now.
And the last method mentioned here is a vitamin tooth mask. So that's mashing up fruits and veggies containing vitamin C. So maybe strawberries, tomatoes, oranges. Then you put the paste on your teeth.
Ugh.
You wait for 5 to 6 minutes and you rinse.
Wow.
Too much effort, man. Way too much effort. I might try the baking soda thing. It's the easiest.
Oh, well, then take some mint leaves and grind those and add that in there as well. Something, we need a fresh, crisp smell.
It sounds to me like Sia should open up his own lab to develop toothpaste. With the primary purpose of having great breath by the end of it. Not so much healthy teeth. All right, Sia, I've got you.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You. That's fine.
One of my greatest sensations is walking into my house and it smells so... The smell of everything feels like it will burn your nasal hairs.
Because so
everything is so chemically and, that's what I need. I'm not a fan of natural.
You want it to be like chlorinated and bacteria free.
Like when it smells of Vim.
Like sterile.
Oh, that's when I know our helper was in there. She was scrubbing.
Domesticizing the place.
Got some elbow grease working there. Yeah, that's what I need. Don't give me ylang ylang. Vitamin mask.
Essential oil diffusers.
I feel like it doesn't
calm down,
help.
You're getting very excited about this. All right. Anything else that we need to know on this this dental plaque thing?
No, those are all the tips. I'm going to try the baking soda thing, and I will report back.
Very good.
Can you try it on Wednesday so that it wears off, and then you come back Friday? Otherwise,
but I'll still brush my teeth.
Oh, okay.
This is just to remove plaque. It's not an either or, Sia.
It's a both.
I'm still judging. Anyway.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 8 o'clock, cliffcentral.com. I'm happy to be back. I hope you're ready to take on a brand new week, and we are here to help you through it every step of the way. We'll be back tomorrow bright and early at 6 a.m.
This is cliffcentral.com.